Welcome, Carol, to Adelaide Chronicles.
Thanks so much, Sue. It's great to be here.
Do you want to just give a little bit of an introduction to yourself?
Sure. I'd like to acknowledge that we're speaking here on Kaurna country, pay my respect to the Kaurna elders past and present. And the work that I do is in the area of art-based life coaching for women, but I've worked predominantly in Aboriginal women's services over many years. So my work is around transformation and change using art, story and life coaching practices. So I've worked in on the board of Aboriginal women's shelters, women's healing groups. I also worked in sort of mainstream domestic violence services as well. But I'm very interested in what we can learn from Aboriginal culture in the contemporary context. So that's really been my passion, recognising the power of story, the role of community, sharing food, and the importance of relationships and connection.
And that's sort of on a holistic basis.
Yeah. I think probably one of the most significant things I've learnt through the generosity of the Aboriginal community and different relationships over the years is that Australia is a country with a very long, strong history, a holistic history where traditional owners and communities are in relationship to the environment and to each other, which is quite a different sort of worldview, I think, than the Western way of sort of dominion over the dominion. In fact, I looked up something the other day about dominion theology, where it was in the Bible, where in one of the interpretations of the Bible, where man was given dominion over the kingdoms. And I think that's probably been part of the cause of a lot of the trouble. Whereas I think Aboriginal culture is not in dominion, it's in relationship too. And that's been one of the most significant awarenesses that I've had around how to deliver programs that are not just culturally appropriate but culturally accountable as a non-Aboriginal woman. What is there art? Is there story? Are we spending time in nature? Or are we just all sitting inside of rooms, you know, with whiteboards and eyes to the front sort of thing?
Yeah. There's such a big difference, isn't there, between something over someone and having and living in the land.
That's right. Relationship, recognising that relationship is very structured as well. I think Western approaches to relationships is often very... It's not so much on a close relationship too, it's about how we structure our system so that we go process into, like, you know, entering the school system at 5, exiting it, you know, to go to university. Or whereas what I've learned about Aboriginal culture is that relationship is about the animals, the water, the environment, the role of elders. And one of the core things is that status and respect is by what you contribute, not by what you have, which is very different. So we know that what you have will give you the opportunity for privilege and power and end up in a position of leadership and influence that you may not have actually gone through the wisdom process to be, worthy of, I guess, for want of a better word. Yeah. So that's another big difference, I think, and the difference is a start. So I have to respect the Aboriginal people who are living in two worlds, especially.
Yes. And how well they do it.
That's right. And also the very forgiving nature. Mm-hmm. I think that's been quite eye-opening for me, particularly with women who have been impacted by the stolen generation, are the stolen generation, how language can often take away what has really happened. So, for example, a friend of mine said, I'm not stolen, I was kidnapped from my mother in front of her by strangers. And if it was reversed, if a white child had been just taken by an Aboriginal person, we would know that as a kidnapping. But we call it the stolen generation because of government policy. But actually, it's only because it's Aboriginal people that we've use a different language framework. So I think part of just being honest about what's really happened and recognising the impact is significant in the healing process for women. Yeah,
and that's the truth for all of Australia.
Yes, it is. And, you know, we're seeing now some of the impact of European land management or lack of land management practices, living on top of the country and sort of layering with the cement and the emissions and using water as if it's an inexhaustible supply, whereas traditional Aboriginal culture, as I understand it, is always about in relationship to, and management is in partnership with, and it is completely the opposite for, we see economic growth, which I'm hashtagging at the moment. Economic growth is just a euphemism for environmental vandalism. That's really what I think, to be really honest, what we're seeing is such devastation of resources and using economic growth as if it's sort of this justification that when we start to get the language right, I think we can start to get some other things right.
And I think now you could call it environmental massacre.
And
wildlife have been massacred.
Well, you know, they have, and it's heartbreaking. And what's happening on the environmental level is not dissimilar to what happens in domestic violence. So in domestic violence, some of the shared themes are that there is a sense of powerlessness. Who has the money and the power gets to have the say. That the goalposts shift, so there's no win-win. It's always about I win, you know, you lose. Also in domestic violence, animals are as at risk as what people are, as women and children. And I know that also men experience domestic violence, but in my work it's predominantly, you know, with women. And the form of gaslighting that happens, which people might be familiar with that term, is that gaslighting is part of the psychological process. That's what happens when climate change denial or saying, you know, that no, that that's not important, or using terms like the Greenies as if there's some sort of like, you know, wacky group of people who just are a problem. And actually, people who have environmental consciousness who've been placed under the Greenies label often are the ones who recognise the responsibility that we have to care for, you know, the environment. So as a long-term domestic violence worker, I'm actually seeing some of the trauma impact that women experience in domestic violence shelters happening collectively. It's one of the effects of domestic violence is there's also vicarious trauma. So for the person who's affected, but then there's the family, the community, often the first responders. If a woman has lost her life, my friend was killed in domestic violence in 2001. Her name was Janet. And it was only about 10 years after her death, I thought, what about the first responders that day? She died very violently and she was taken to the hospital. So I think about the vicarious trauma of the first responders. So I think we can see collectively that there's a lot of things that we attribute to sort of individual cases of domestic violence, but some of those patterns are actually even sewn into the foundation post-colonisation of how people are treated. I think it's highly complex. I think for some people it is just a seeking of power and control. For some, I think it is an inability to manage themselves and their emotions, and that's what we recognise on the domestic violence cycle, where there's periods of calm and peace. When we had the spill last year, I could see the domestic violence cycle playing out politically because there was the build-up. We knew that something was happening, rumblings in the air, and then there was sort of the explosion. And I have a domestic violence cycle model that I could make available on the cycle. So first of all, there's the build-up, then there's the explosion. That's what happened when we saw what happened between Malcolm Turnbull and we knew that, you know, Tony Abbott and him had unresolved business. Then there was the explosion, which was the actual getting rid of him. I think they even call it, is it the knifing? Or there's a term that they use I remember, I can't remember the exact term, but I remember it's actually a term of violence when they take out someone. And then we had the honeymoon. I'm on your side, we're all together now, we had the new Prime Minister come in, we had the period of honeymoon time, and then we had the build-up, which we've experienced with, you know, the current crisis and how he managed that. So we can see that actually in our society we've got a lot of the symptoms that are happening in domestic violence on the personal and family level are happening collectively. So that's a long-winded answer, but to answer your question, I think a lot of it is power. It's also psychological and emotional immaturity, how people respond to the quest for power or control. Yeah. But I am an optimist. I do think you have to be if you work in domestic violence shelters, because we see a lot of victories in women's lives. And I think that this is a tipping point time that has been looming. And I think now that we are actually in the midst of it, some of those systems are simply not going to work and people can get voted out and new people can get voted in. So we have a lot of young people now who are not of the ideology of capitalism, and, you know, economic growth is sort of the ultimate thing. So I do remain optimistic, even in the midst of...
So are there parallels within the victories?
Yeah, I think so. I think if we looked at, I take great inspiration from Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand, what we're seeing the new Prime Minister in Finland. So I think we have to look at those signs. We know that, and another example is what Julia Gillard endured as a woman in leadership, and we had the, you know, ditch the witch and that kind of, that bullying that was happening. But we are always moving, whether it be forward or backward, I'm not always sure. But there are young people now, I know, and you probably experience this in your family, who simply will not put up with that. Mm. And they're the new voters, the next generation of children. So I think a lot of what we're experiencing is the sort of the dying days of that white patriarchal kind of mindset that doesn't consider other people. I mean, it was probably when you're at school and when I was at school, there was that terrible term of smoothing the dying pillow of Aboriginal nation. And we know that that now is a myth, but it was a belief of self-entitlement that, you know, that Aboriginal people would die out. So I think we're always changing and evolving. And I have to, from the work that I do, choose to focus on where's the possibility of change. Otherwise, it's too overwhelming. It's just, particularly in domestic violence shelters, where all of the families are there because of violence, we have to address the needs of the women and the children, but then go, well, where's the areas where change can happen? And we focus on that, and we see amazing changes, amazing victories. Women who lost everything, who are now counsellors and educators or small business women, or, you know, so often crisis is a point of transformation. And I think that might possibly be where we are.
That's a wonderful place to be if we're on a cusp.
Yeah.
And art is a medium. It's a really powerful medium.
Yes, it is. And you and I were chatting earlier. I shared a model that I think is more effective than the building bridges model, and it's called the mandorla, which is the Italian word for almond, which I didn't know until an Italian woman in the group said, oh, that means almond. So it's a shape created where two circles meet. And in the mandorla, so if I'm working in a group of migrant and refugee women, there might be 10 language groups represented through it, and we have interpreters. In the mandorla, we find what's our commonality. And our commonality is we're all women. If there's children, mothers in the room, grandmothers, then children are children no matter what the language. And if you ask people, what do you want? People want a peaceful life. They want a good life for their children, regardless of their language group or their religion. So in the mandorla, we celebrate and amplify where we are connected, and then we learn from outside of the mandorla our unique differences and what we can learn from one another. So that's one of the ways I think that we can find that shared that unified space that we're needing at this point in time, where there's a lot of vested interests and differences, and also, you know, the politics of fear and demonising one group of people, which is historical in Australia. Aboriginal people were demonised, the language that was used, and we as different cultural groups come through, there's a demonising. We've seen what's the demonising of the Sudanese youth, whereas if it's a young white Australian, it's not going to be all white Australian youth are demonised. So there's a lot of kind of processes, I think, that are habitual in how we divide and separate.
So you said about it being a tipping point. 2020?
Well, I think so. I think...
just have 2020 vision.
Exactly, so. That's right. And, you know, we're in the 21st century. If we use a sort of the Western model of when we turn 21, we become a grown-up, then I think, you know, we've been messing up our room here on Earth. I think that we are collectively, because, you know, a lot of First Nations people, a lot of people who are connected to environment and are already there anyway in that. And I think that's probably one of the areas I've seen, and you've probably seen too on social media, the call for traditional burning practices, that land management and that sort of thing. But just going back to what you said about art, so in that mandala, art is across all cultures. Storytelling is across all cultures. Sharing food. So it might be different food that you share, but in the mandala, that's where we can say, oh, yes, what was your favourite dish when you were growing up? And sometimes when we have that conversation in shelters, someone might bring that favourite dish to the next group. So it's recognising that in that space, yeah, everyone's there because of domestic violence, but they're not defined by their domestic violence.
And we talked before about the beautiful sound that is made when you have seven languages being translated at the same time.
That, so recently, in partnership with Women's Safety Services and Western Domestic Violence Service, we hosted a program over 18 months called Cold for Cold Women. So Cold being culturally and linguistically diverse, and our acronym was Community and Life Skills Development. So it was a group coaching program. All of the women were from migrant refugee backgrounds. Some in the very early days of the trauma of actually arriving here, things that had happened on the way or things that had happened in their country of origin. And we had interpreters in the room for the life coaching information. So we could have had up to seven or eight interpreters. And what I experienced for the first time was to hear some of the life coaching information, might be about breathing, relaxing, self-care, setting goals, then being interpreted simultaneously in those different languages. And I think of it as like the women's choir. So there's some of the languages, they have a higher pitch resonance, some are at a deeper resonance, how it's spoken, the length of words, and it was the music of women, which I hadn't experienced before.
That's just beautiful.
It was such a privilege. And what the feedback from the interpreters was that they hadn't experienced this either. Because usually their interpreting might be in, you know, hospitals or for conferences or for Centrelink or different places. But rarely had they been in a room all interpreting at the same time. So
different intonations.
Amazing. And a really... empowering experience, because everybody in the room in that mandala were all accessing their own language and it coming back. And it was quite humbling for me. I was the only person in the room who only spoke one language. You know, that was sort of something. And that my English language didn't always work for the stories I was telling, or that how I'd used English language in creating my first colouring book, which is called The Big Girl's Little Colouring Book. There was a thing in there, instead of doing doom and gloom, do om and glow om. And that worked by doing a little inflection to change the word. But that didn't work in any of the other languages. So I felt my
own
do om, glow om. You know, it can seem to be a bit idealistic, but sometimes it is just a little thing that can flick to get us into a bit more resourceful state. And that's very much what life coaching is about, is finding the resourceful state and building on that. Yeah. So art, song, story, dance. By the end of each group, we would finish each session doing a circle dance. And so women were bringing their own music in from their home country, where music that meant something to them. And then on our graduation day, some of the women did a dance from their own country. So to me, that is really what inclusion is. Mm. Is it's not just creating a space for people of a non-English background to sit and be have programs delivered from our perspective. It's actually about the richness of our diversity and the sameness.
And it's about respecting that space and adoring it, loving it,
enjoying it. And feeling the magic of that particular song or that particular dance. And so we learnt many stories which often don't come out in maybe more, you know, six-week program which is about anger management or, you know, loss and grief. Sometimes they don't carry the story or have a place for the story, individual stories, and it was very story-rich. And so from that we created a colouring book called Women Colouring for Peace. It's available in 7 languages, including English, through the Women's Safety Services website. So it can be downloaded as a PDF, and it's based on the designs of the women, and it has 3 themes. So it's about place and belonging at the start of the book. The middle is self-care, and then the final part is creating my new future. And so the women have drawn designs, and the meditations or the words are written in those 7 different language groups.
Just hearing that gives me hope for the future.
Yeah. Well, I think, someone said once, a pessimist is just a well-informed optimist.
I like that.
And for a moment I thought, is that true?
Yeah.
But, you know, there are things that we can't affect in life, and there are things that we can. And we can affect the political direction of the country. We can affect the stories that the current generation are hearing. Nowadays, if we have a phone, we are all media creators and producers. So I think the era that kind of George Orwell defined, where there was just one media outlet telling one story being repeated over and over, is long gone. Mm. I don't think George Orwell could have predicted this digital landscape that we're in now. And there's still a lot of the propaganda and tools people use, but we see it can be challenged straight away. And we're seeing what's happening with Trump and the polarities of his position. Carl Jung said that the shadow, rises. Mm. So, yeah, I am an optimist. Mm. I have chickens. I have a veggie garden. That's where optimism comes from. Yes. You can't be completely pessimistic when you've got 3 chickens running for the scrap bucket. There's too much humour in it. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm. I'd love, Carol, if this could be a bit of a series.
Sure.
This could be series 1.
Fabulous. I'd really enjoy that. I think there's some stories that come from behind the doors of domestic violence shelters that are incredibly inspiring stories. I usually refer to shelters as the women's village. I also acknowledge that there's a lot of men who support the work that women do. But if there's just one last thing I could tell you for this podcast, is about 2 brothers walking. So my partner, David Salomon, John Hartley and Murray George, in partnership as the 2 brothers team, created a film called 2 Brothers Walking. And in that film, we see through the eyes of Murray George and John Hartley in their communities. John's Kukuyalanju from far north Queensland. Murray George is Anangu from AP Wildlands. How deeply connected to country Aboriginal people are, and the relationship, how resourceful that is, but also the responsibility that Aboriginal people have in that relationship that I think we can learn from as non-Aboriginal people. And at the moment it's on NITV to be able to be viewed in full. We do also have a website, but the full film can be viewed, and so I think it's about January the 27th it'll be there for. So we'd love for people to watch that film and hear the stories. It's a beautiful story of group of Angu travelling to Far North Queensland to the cultural festival and presenting the elder in that community with a painting they specially made. And we also meet some...
That's a beautiful story, isn't it?
Really. Mm-hmm. It's a story of connection. It's a story of creating together, generosity, of hosting people on your country. And I really think that non-Aboriginal Australia can learn a great deal from these practices that have been here for thousands and thousands of years. What's happening is quite recent in the sort of the devastation and ravaging of the mismanagement of Australian resources and land, and the suffering of the animals, I think, is something that, of course, the people and what people have lost. I think with the animals is it's an extra layer to the suffering because they need us to help them, as people do, obviously, too. But I think that has really initiated a lot of action for people. I heard that there's koala knitting mittens happening across the planet.
We're doing that here.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Mm. Mm. So my vision is that this be at 2020, by 2030, Australia's leading the way in renewable resources, in responsible management, and in accountability for our political leaders to actually have the best interests of people and environment. Well, that must have been a good sign.
I checked off.
Yeah, I think that was a ring from, you know, like a... So, yeah, that's my vision for the future, Sue, that this 10 years be one of serious reorganising of what is currently happening. Yeah, and we draw in partnership with the existing knowledge and authority of Aboriginal people.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's... I mean, it's really something to aspire to.
Mm, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.